Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tiffany and I give our all to this podcast with curating information, researching platforms, and creating a show with the best up-to-date information we can. We have a vested interest in the growth and health of your business and hope that you feel the same way about us. We've joined Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month, and you'll gain access to our community, exclusive behind the scenes, speaker access, publicity for your business, webinar discount opportunities, and more. Please support us so that we can continue supporting you. So,
today's topic.
Hello, again. Welcome to the Business Behind Small Business. Whether you're selling or staying, we are here to remind you not to go cheap. So.
Well, there's today's theme. Don't be cheap.
Don't go cheap. When you're first starting out, chances are most of the money you're putting into your company is coming out of your own pocket. That means you have to be diligent and economical. Not going to hate you for that. A lot of times it also means that when it comes to choosing services, you will likely choose your cheapest options. Again, not going to hate you for that. However, we are here to tell you that you can end up costing yourself a lot more money. And in some ways, it can also be rather dangerous. Security issues, cyber breaches, and any number of problems can be the demise of your growing business and your dreams of ownership. So,
well, with that, though, before you're kind of like, tell me something I don't know, we are going to talk about a few instances where going cheap actually turns out just fine.
Yeah, we're going to do that too.
Going cheap.
Yeah, going cheap.
With quotes, air quotes. So there's ways to go about it if you are strapped on hard cash resources.
Right? Correct.
So I guess when we think cheap, we always think like not shelling a lot of money out, which is true. But there are ways that you can spend less cash but still get what you need. Stay with us. We'll get there.
Yes. We're going to go down that rabbit hole together.
And if you can see Savannah's face, she very much disapproves of that conversation. But hey.
Okay. So today we are going to talk about going cheap and how it can get very, very expensive. Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and after this podcast.
Sorry, I keep swiveling around my
That's
camera.
Right.
Because I just realized like there's this big blinding light behind me, which is great.
It's okay. Like an angel.
Yeah, it wasn't a halo. It was a big blinding light.
Oh. Walk into the light.
It's okay. It's been a long week.
Right.
I think we've decided that. I think we're doing this. It's a Wednesday right now.
Yes.
It's a Wednesday. It feels like Monday. I've worked my way through Wednesday already. So today really should just be Saturday.
How can this be the slow time for me? How?
Slow.
I feel like everything's on fire all the time.
It's August. All right. Let's talk about it.
Yes.
You have a good point to start with. What is something you should not go cheap? So. To you.
All right. So as a business owner, oftentimes this means in your mind, the cheapest labor is your own, right? But that's not really the case. Think about how much you charge to do your job. You likely charge a rate that pays the bills and leaves you a little profit as well, or at least you hope that you do. The problem is a lot of businesses will choose not to pay themselves what they are worth. And when they see that their company is profiting, quote unquote, they're not taking into account what it costs to have themselves in the business also. So if someone in your position would normally make $100,000, $200,000, or whatever it may be, you have to take that into account when you're looking at your financial statements. Also, if you charge or someone in your position would charge an hourly rate, then you're losing that money by doing other frivolous, although necessary tasks. What I call the time suck tasks that somebody else could be doing. So we're gonna math this out, okay? Math this out. If you make $50 an hour, okay, let's just say, or someone in your position could make $50 an hour. And if you were to break it down hourly, then you are losing $50 an hour by doing administrative tasks, which as an owner, you tend to find yourself doing a lot of administrative stuff. So if you had someone else doing the administrative tasks and you were paying them, let's say, $20 an hour, well, then you'd be saving yourself $30 an hour by not doing those tasks. On top of that, you would also be making $50 an hour by both bringing in new clients or just doing what someone in your position would normally be doing. So let's say, for example, if you're a photographer, you're taking your time away from doing photography, or if you're an artist or, you know, whatever it is, a woodworker, whatever, you're taking your time away from creating the thing that makes you the money. So in any case, it really is. So anyway, so in the case of the financial reports, if someone in your position would normally make, again, say $100,000 a year, and you're looking at your profit and loss report, or you're just your financials, your balance sheet, your profit and loss, and you're like, oh, wow, my company net profit was $100,000. Look at me go. Well, it's actually not. Actually, you are at a zero.
Yeah, and I would say too that so a lot of companies run this way for a very long time because the owner's used to doing everything and being the back office, as well as maybe even wearing some other like hats, more revenue generating hats, right? Maybe helping out on a project and things like that. And they never account for their pay other than the fact that, oh, whatever is on the bottom line, I get to take that home and that's my pay, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you present something like that, like let's say you want to go sell your business.
I was thinking about that.
Something like that. First of all, a savvy buyer out there isn't going to want to buy your business because they're basically buying a job. And who the heck would want to buy a job?
No, right? No. Get a job
for free. You think that you're like, oh, this is a great job. I created it. Well, you did. And you're going to get an offer that is equivalent to your job, but maybe not the value of your business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is something I think a lot of people don't think about and just don't factor in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, how do you, what's your antidote?
That's actually something that you and I actually talked about. Yeah. We dealt with a client who, or they didn't end up becoming a client because we told them not to buy it, but a woman who wanted to purchase a business, and by looking at the first thing that we noticed was that there was no salary. And when you factored in that salary,
well, there's no salary for the owner, and she wasn't taking out any distributions.
Right. So there was no salary, but there was no money being paid out to her. Basically.
Right. And we knew that she worked in the business. So she was playing some kind of active role in the business, and there was nothing being paid out on the profit and loss to her.
Exactly. And this was a brick and mortar. She should have been getting paid something. And since she wasn't, the company went from looking like it was slightly profitable to negative, and I think it was like below negative. I think that you have to pay yourself something. And if you're not paying yourself something, and let's say you're not in a place to sell, you're not looking to sell your company, you are looking to grow your company, and you want to do it in a healthy manner, you do still have to take into consideration what it would cost to pay you.
So, yes. And so when it gets a little convoluted is when, if you're starting up and you're just starting to hire people, maybe you still have to wear a few hats.
Yes.
So most people, what they do is when they go hire somebody for the first time, typically it's some kind of client or customer delivery, customer facing job, because that's usually what takes a lot of time from business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do that. So let's say, for example, what's a good company? What's a good type of business we can use as an example?
I feel like anybody in the service industry, or not necessarily just service industry.
Let's say a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Let's say you go in and you open a coffee shop, right? The first thing you're probably going to hire is people who are either baristas or people at the cash register, because you're probably doing both of those to start with, right? One person shop. So for every role you play, you just need to remember that that could be an individual person outside of you.
Right.
And how much would you pay that person to do the job you're doing for however many hours? And you should kind of factor that into your profit and loss.
Yes.
Now, maybe you can't factor that in by putting it into your books, which is fine, but there's this thing called, you can export it to Excel and run some numbers on it, right? Add an extra line in and just pretend, if it wasn't just paying you, how much would you pay someone to do that job? And then eventually you also got to remember that you are the manager of the business at some point, and you are the executive of the business, you know, hired a manager. So then again, as an executive of business, how much do you expect to pay yourself as that role? So if you think about it by roles and look at your profit and loss, including those numbers, you'll have what we call a little bit more normalized or more realistic bottom line, which is important because even if you aren't selling, even if you want to build a legacy business, even if you want a business that's just going to last for the next 5 years, you kind of want it to last for the next 5 years, right?
I think it's kind of kooky that everything you're saying are things that are already like shuffled in my head, ready to respond with, but then you say it. So, like now that I'm in a place where you and I are thinking the same thing, it's crazy that we are in this place now and with each other.
First of all, this is not, we're not reinventing the wheel for the first time.
I promise you,
everybody who gets into a certain maturity as a business owner all know this as fact.
Of course. However, I will also say one on the flip side of this is that it's also good for you to factor in how much it would cost for future labor so that you know you can start setting goals for your company as far as how much money you need to make in order to have this staff, in order to have that staff. You know, let's say you need a distributor. So, well, how much would distributors cost? Or, you know, that's actually what I did when I was looking into like a management level, what my supervisor's management, how much would they cost? What's the going rate in this area nationally? You know, I did some research on that. And then I had to get myself to that money place so that I could afford those people. So that's actually
a good way to think about it. I think we actually talked about that in our pricing episode is how to build up your pricing.
And one
of the things is, you know, design your team now and build a pricing that can accommodate these.
Yes.
Because what happens is most people don't think about that. Mm-hmm. And you find yourself, you always forget about hiring a manager one day to take what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So then you price yourself too low. And sometimes if you're far too low, trying to make up that difference is incredibly hard when the time comes and you need a manager because you haven't really thought about that yet.
Right.
So, yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. So don't go cheap on yourself. That's what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next up, you want to talk about going cheap on others, like hiring people.
Oh my God. That's the worst. Do not go cheap on the people that you are hiring.
So guilty of that.
I know you were. So you were, and I was not.
This is like okay, first of all, right? This is you too, as the business owner. And I, one, didn't have that much cash, right? Because I was bootstrapping everything, and I was, you know, I had to pay myself my own bills as well as knowing I wanted to expand. So this is more of wanting to expand, not knowing how to, not doing it the right way at all, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought about how much I'm making now and how much I can afford. Not so much what's the level, what's the value I want to employ to bring in, and how much does that person cost at that value level? So I ended up hiring kind of cheap, and then it bit me. Because then, you know, as quickly as I hired them, it's probably as quickly I ended up having to let them go. And like, first of all, most people stay on board for at least a month, right? Like, you don't know how they perform until a month is over, which, by the way, a month is a seriously long time and expensive because you still have to pay the person. Just because they didn't perform doesn't mean you can be like, oh, I'm not going to pay you for the last 2 weeks. You're kind of illegal.
a little, slightly illegal.
Yes. So, you know, from that was a lot of lessons of not hiring cheap. And then, you know, instead of thinking about what I can afford, you know, think about like, how can I make more money to be able to hire the right talent?
Right.
How do I do that instead?
Well, that goes to the whole projecting your future staff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like what I did was the opposite of you. Mm-hmm. I got myself to a place where I could afford one person at least who could work full time for me. So she was taking on a lot of stuff. And the funny thing is that she's still with me.
Good for you.
You know, but like it helped me with my retention. Granted, I will say that things went all kinds of sideways after COVID. That's a whole other episode. Actually, that's going to be the next episode because, you know, disengagement and whatnot. Yeah. But
we're not going to talk about COVID.
No. We're not going to talk about COVID. No, we're going to talk about what
exaggerated by
exactly.
Condition to COVID. It was always there.
Yes, for sure. But in any case, so if you are in a place where you really do need to, let's say, again, we're going to take the coffee house. Let's say you really need to hire more than one barista, you've got to get yourself somehow in a place where you can hire at least two people. Or here's a better idea. Don't start a coffee shop until you think you can hire at least two people from the jump. That's my personal opinion.
So the other thing I would say here too is, this is where someone's going to shake her head. We want to talk about how you can go cheap, right? So what I ended up doing was, I don't know if I would, I probably would do it again. I didn't know that much then. So I feel like I probably spent a lot more time trying to figure it out. So, hey, you know, learn from my mistakes. Don't do this, right? But I mean, what I did end up doing is, I did end up hiring more junior experienced people because that's all I could afford. Mm-hmm. And around here, especially where we are at DMV, like it's just as a small business, it's sometimes really hard to hire because you can't pay as much as the big companies around right. you. And so they're already there grabbing on the talent and you're kind of like this tiny little company, you know, paying out 50-75% of what they can. And that's not even including the benefits that they're offering. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up hiring a little bit more junior level and then offering more flexible like types of benefits that I know that would be appealing. And then the cost, what really came in that was not hard cash, was really my time and effort to basically train them
right.
the right way.
Yeah.
So I didn't quite go cheap in a sense that I didn't end up spending less. I just spent less cash. But I still, you know, I made up for it with time and effort, which, mm-hmm. you know, you can also argue is just expensive, if not more expensive. Mm-hmm. So
that is true. So do we talk about professional services?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so not only should you not be going cheap on yourself or your team, but you absolutely should not be going cheap on your professional services. So what does that mean? What is a professional service? Do not go cheap on your attorney. Do not go cheap on your insurance. Make sure you have insurance and the right insurance. Do not go cheap on your bookkeeper, your accountant, or your CPA.
First of all, that's not three separate people always.
So. Yeah, it's not always three separate people, but like whoever it
don't
is.
Don't freak out as you go and hire three separate people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whomever it is, that's going to be, you know, your bookkeeper, your books.
People who are going to handle your finance.
Yes, that's the word.
Don't go cheap.
That's it. These professionals are the gatekeepers to your company, whether or not you see it that way. It does not matter to me. They are. They are your gatekeepers. And they can, through the results of their work or the quality of what they produce, make or break your company. So hire a professional admin, someone who with a lot of experience, and pay them well because they are the queen bee to your hive. And even if it's a guy, they're still a queen bee. With a lot of experience, if they have a lot of experience, and are willing to work for you. And I'm sorry to say, your admin is who is going to be holding your company together, and they're going to be problem solving on your behalf. So if you can find somebody who would be an admin for you and can problem solve on your behalf, I tell you that is worth its weight in gold. If you cannot afford to hire,
especially if you're not good at it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you cannot afford to hire someone full-time or part-time, there are companies out there that you can contract someone, you know, like mine. but not just me. I'm just saying, like, there are people that you can hire on a contracted level, and I'm sure that you are connected enough that you could hire somebody that you know through a friend of a friend or
whatever. In other words, not a high school student.
Absolutely not. No. And not
sure is your bookkeeper should be a high school student.
Nor should they be related to you.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's not.
Or married to you.
Yeah, that's probably just good for your marriage.
For sure. Do not do that.
How many times have you heard this remark? I'll just use the word spouse. My spouse has an MBA in finance, and she or he has been handling my books. So it shouldn't be that. Yeah, no, it's a disaster.
I've
heard that, excuse me, like I've heard that more than once.
Uh-huh, me
too. It's a disaster.
Every time.
So.
Every single time.
It's a disaster.
So professional services, that's first and foremost. I say, before you even go into business, you need to find out how much they're going to cost and whether or not you can afford it. Because if you can't afford it, most definitely your insurance. If you can't
they'll skip on your insurance.
That's yeah. Like if you cannot afford insurance or you cannot afford to pay the taxes that you're going to have to pay, then you should not own a business.
And again, like we want to talk about the going cheap part. If you really are strapped on cash, things you can do is, first of all, never, you know, on hiring a good lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
Look over everything. Now, mm-hmm. if you can't afford the hourly rate that they have, I mean, there are things you can do, right? Like, you can not have them create your contract from scratch. Right. Maybe come with a template and then mm-hmm. have them help you revise it, mm-hmm. which will save a lot of time because they tend to bill on hourly rates, right? Mm-hmm. Bookkeepers and accounts are a little bit harder, but if you don't have that much cash, then luckily within that profession, there's a lot of outsourced options. So mm-hmm. you can get people fractionally
yeah.
without having to pay like for a full-time or a full part-time staff to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. And then what was the third professional services you brought up? It was legal. It was accounts. I think that might be it.
Insurance and admin.
Insurance. Yeah. Insurance. There's just no getting around that. That's a hard cost that you, that's the first thing you should make sure you have money.
Absolutely.
That's gonna help you in the long run. And that's just not something that you want to go into business without. Mm-hmm. Even if you think you don't need it, first of all, it's insurance. You hope you never need it. Mm-hmm. But it's there for a reason because there are circumstances that you can't even foresee mm-hmm. that may happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not that expensive. You know, I have to say, like, if you go in business and you can't afford insurance, you may want to rethink how, you know, you're financing your business in general, right?
Yes.
You might want to take a step back and think about, you know, saving up some more cash or mm-hmm. something like that to be able to afford at least 1 year's of insurance mm-hmm. up front. And then for accounting professionals, nope, we're good. I think I covered it all, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Professional services.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
So another service that I would, it's probably is a lot of professional service, but IT.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it does under professional services,
maybe.
But no, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. IT,
it's is not traditionally professional services.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that one I have a love hate relationship with.
You and me both. I think everybody does.
So I will tell you, I was IT, right? And I held on to that way, way, way too long. But I would also say that I'm also really good at figuring things out.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the stuff that needed to be figured out was really sometimes the answer is, did you restart that?
Is it plugged in?
Yeah. How about this? Restart it first, then come talk to me. And I fixed like 95% of any IT issues we had.
Uh-huh. Right?
But I got really deep into the whole IT thing. So I have a love hate just because, you know, I've been on the other side, and I'm so sorry for all the IT help desk people out there right now about what I'm going to say. I've been on the other side receiving end of, like, calling, like, help support and stuff like that. It is the most frustrating thing in the world and the biggest waste of time sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to say that. So true.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I'm, like, sitting there going, you know, they're doing, like, the process of elimination, and I'm sitting there going, I already did the process of elimination. But then, of course, they don't believe you, which I get, because not everybody understands tech that well. And I'm sitting on my phone while they're experimenting on my laptop and telling me to go click this, click that. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know, you, first of all, you're doing this to me. If you're doing it to my staff, you're uh-huh. not productive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm paying for that a very unproductive time on top of paying for your freaking IT service. So,
yep.
Such a lovely relationship. But if you're in the right company, amazing.
Yes.
Because it is such a time suck.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point you do have to put on your big boy and big girl pants and, you know, hire a nice IT company, but
yeah.
And when you do, don't go cheap because there are a whole spectrum of people who provide IT, which means there are some really good ones and really bad ones.
Mm. Yep. So listening to us, you're probably thinking, okay, so what you're saying is they can't go cheap on anything. And to be honest with you, yeah. We're telling you not to go cheap on anything.
Well, get clever about it.
I know. Be clever. I kind of feel like go buy your clothes on sale. Clip some coupons for your groceries. Maybe don't go out to dinner every night of the week. You know, be a little, go to Marketplace instead of buying something new. Don't buy your bicycle from a bicycle shop. Buy it from Marketplace or something like that. I don't know what to tell you. But you can do cheap in those areas or do more budget friendly in those areas. So that you can afford to not have to go budget friendly with your company, because in the end it's gonna affect your bottom line negatively. You want to have enough money to grow your business, and personally, I don't see a negative to that.
What I do see, and I think what we're both saying, is that budgeting is going to be really important. Like, I think budgeting is kind of the antidote to this entire issue about going cheap. There are things you absolutely need for your business. You just can't get around it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hire the cheapest option out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we allowed to talk about, are we in a segment yet where we're going to talk about truths? Or
we are at the raw truth
okay,
now.
Okay, then it's only skip into that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just going to go straight into the raw truth.
Okay. So, you know, I think if you can find something for value at a good price, and I think usually that's what it is that the value and the price somewhat aligns.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, right? But then I think some people think too much about what they don't have, and mm-hmm. they try to go out with that mindset of, oh, I only have $5, so I can only hire anybody who's willing to do $5. Although the person you need really needs to be paid like $20,
mm-hmm.
right? That's just, you know, just not the right way to go about it. But, you know, there are a lot of great options out there now, right? There's a lot of software mm-hmm. options that can really cut down on the cost mm-hmm. of things. And then I would say I was a big fan when I was kind of bootstrapping of using contracted services from Fiverr.
Mm-hmm.
That's Fiverr 2Rs or 2Bs. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's 2Rs.
I think it's 2Bs.
Oh, well, there you go. Anyways.
Maybe. I don't know. But you know what we're
Google
saying.
Google it. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Right. So Fiverr was like, I found some great, great people to help me out on Fiverr for a price that I could afford.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what you don't pay in hard cash, you make up for in time and effort.
Yes.
Right. So with Fiverr, guess what? You have to read all the reviews. You mm-hmm. have to do your homework.
You do still have to do some back work.
Right. Like me going cheap on hiring people because I can afford that much. My alternative was, let's go ahead and hire more entry-level people, and then I'll spend the time and effort to train them up.
Mm-hmm.
So that, again, is still a cost. And then I feel like when I was, like, starting out, I probably did some bartering, meaning mm-hmm. that somebody else had a service I need, mm-hmm. I had a service that they could use, and then we kind of bartered, so there yep. was no cash exchange, because neither of us had cash, enough cash to exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what was the currency in that case? Time mm-hmm. and effort,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
yeah.
You know,
and we're going to mention some more in our talk about books, apps, platforms, stuff like yes. that. So,
but budget.
Yeah.
Budget.
Yes.
How much would you say if you were to start a business, like how much would you say somebody should maybe just have set aside to kind of be their budget?
It's hard to say because it depends on what it is that they're. Yeah.
Well, outside like you're not, like, I'm not talking about like you have to like, buy a product or anything to actually resell it or to sell it. Like, you're not building a product, but what do you think about all the back office and just the setup and the running of the business? Not including hiring people, because most people can't hire in the first year or first 6 months at least, right?
The way that I look at it is that you should, if you have a partner, or even if you don't have a partner, you should have at least 6 months of living expenses mm. at the least.
Mm-hmm.
You should have at least 6 months of living expenses to float you until you can get your feet firmly on the ground. Because I'm a little bit more pessimistic than that. I prefer a year, and I did. We had to really tighten our belts for a year, and my husband had to be more so the main breadwinner so that I could afford to grow my company.
For
the time being. And it wasn't until my second year when I started to feel like I was out of the red.
Mm-hmm.
But it helped having that 1 year to feel a little bit more free to experiment with
yeah.
how I wanted to grow my company.
Yeah, I would say the same. I would say 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I know you went for a year. I was much younger and less responsible. So I probably was close to about 3 to 6 months and anything like that. Honestly, if you can't put away 3 months at a minimum,
yeah.
you probably shouldn't get your day job.
Yeah, definitely.
That's just the honest truth,
and,
of it, right?
And I think for a lot of people, they can keep their day job depending on what it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
It to me is no different than if you were to quit your day job to look for another job. You know, how much money would you need to have? What do economists think that you need to have if you were to lose your job tomorrow? Oftentimes they say 3 to 6 months. So try to have at least enough money in the bank that if it's going to be a slow roll, you're not going to have to suffer for it. In our case, I had 2 kids, I was pregnant with one, and you know, I had a lot going on. So that's why for me, it was a larger requirement. But if you don't have a lot of expenses, generally speaking, mm-hmm. for yourself, or that many people to be responsible for, definitely 3 to 6 months, I think, is appropriate.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, you know, that's just even covering your living expenses, right? Just making sure that you have enough money to pay your like your bills day to day. I would say that if you're starting a business, I think 10K is a good number for your.
I would say so.
10K stored away as your budget for your business. Now, again, like we're not talking about you going out to hire somebody your first year or your 6 months, and you're not, you know, having to shell out like cost for like product or, you know, parts of your product to be able to put it together and things like that. This is just for the startup, the setup, the legal, the accounting, the software, all the things to kind of get your business running, the incorporation, whatever the case may be. I would say if you set aside about 10 grand as your budget, you should be pretty good to go.
Yeah, definitely. So for myself, when I first started out 12 years ago, people, what I would say, what it is that we do, people would say, oh, are you a virtual assistant? And I'm like, no. But that was also my fault because I wasn't truly articulating what it was that we did. And oftentimes people would kick the tires and then they go and hire somebody that was offshore to either do their books or admin services. Now, offshore can be beneficial for some people, but when it comes to doing bookkeeping or admin services, it's really touch and go. I would say that probably...
First of all, it's also two very different skill sets.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that has always occurred to me, that people think admin and bookkeeping are the same skill set.
Yeah.
Right? No. And that's when you are going cheap and incredibly naive, if that is what you're looking for. Or office manager.
Yeah, yeah.
And bookkeeping. Yeah. Nope.
Not at all.
And if that is the case, then you might want to ask yourself some questions.
Right. And it's not. And it's not about what they can do right. It's about how they can fix their mistake. That is always where they get caught. Just because your office manager could do your books doesn't mean they could fix a massive mistake either. Well, that's when you need somebody who's a bookkeeper.
Most people feel like doing your books is just entering data into a system, right? Yeah. And that's the thing, is booking more. And I think part of it is also, there's also a lot of people out there who are office managers and who are admins that have been asked to, or they volunteer to say, oh, I'll do the, they call it doing books.
Right,
it's not doing books, right? Putting numbers into a system is like me typing something into Excel.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me a freaking like mathematician.
I always say, just because you're holding a hammer doesn't make you a carpenter.
Right. Or just because I can type out what looks like a contract on, you know, Word doesn't make me a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's experience, there's context behind that that people confuse.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want an admin to enter stuff into your QuickBooks, then that is what it's called, admin entering stuff into QuickBooks, not bookkeeping.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
That's right. No, that's right. But you know what?
But I think that's the challenge you were running into.
Yes. Right?
Because you had offered both, but you knew very separate skill set.
Yeah.
But most people's heads, it's not a separate skill set.
And 90% of the time, the books would come back mucked up and they would need me to fix it. Or, you know, they were paying $5 an hour or $6 an hour for somebody to do their books, or $5 an hour for somebody to do admin services. But they spoke so little English that often they would find themselves, and this is real problems that people have come to me with, that, you know, they'd have to do two or three times more of the work so that they could fix whatever it was that the admin wasn't able to do. Now, again, I'm not saying that offshore is terrible. All I'm saying is that you need to understand what it is that you truly need. And it might be, it might make better sense for you to hire somebody who is right here.
Well, see, again, I think that comes back to compensating with time and effort, right?
Right.
If you don't have the money to go out and hire somebody with reputation, you know, is going to do it right and well the first time, then you need to spend the time and effort vetting who you're going to hire, whether it's offshore or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, not what's not coming out in hard cash, it's going to come out in time.
Right? Yeah.
So it's paying for it either way.
Yeah. And I will say that when I first moved to, or rather back to Virginia from Detroit, mm-hmm. I found that it was absolutely not the Virginia that I had left. And I mean, it is so different between Detroit and, or Detroit, Michigan, and say Fairfax County, Virginia. One is the blue collar, I don't know, motorcycle riding, tatted up, bad boy. And the other is the vineyard vines wearing country club golfer.
Fair. Okay.
I don't need to tell you which is which. But all I can say is that I found that one, the way that I communicated was entirely different, wasn't understood. I actually went to an intercommunication class at our local community college so that I could learn how to speak Northern Virginia, basically. Also, you know, I also didn't understand the traffic patterns here. We didn't really have traffic in Detroit. So like if you left at 5 o'clock and you needed to go somewhere.
Nobody has traffic here unless you're in Atlanta, LA, or New York.
I mean,
know what the traffic is like.
Yeah, but I had no idea. Yeah. So like, you know, if you have somewhere to be in 20 minutes and you leave at 5 o'clock, you'll be there in 20 minutes. And, like if it's
here, it's like definitely 40. It's just like between hours of 9, 11.
Right. Like if it's 20,
four,
if it's
six.
Yeah. Like if it's six, like the first in-person client that I had, she was 5.5 miles away from me. And I was like, that shouldn't take me more than 15 minutes. It took me 45 minutes no matter what I did because of all of the different congested areas that I had to drive through. Who knew? So you can only imagine the kind of trouble that I would get into when I had to schedule somebody leaving from Ellicott City at 5 for a dinner in D.C. at 6. You know, mileage-wise, it looks like it should only take an hour. Sure, not a problem. I mean, that's probably a 3-hour drive, you know, hour and a half without traffic. But anyway, so I'm positive they didn't make it on time. Anyway, moral of the story is to help. It helps to hire somebody local, even if they're going to be remote, because they understand the ins and outs of the area you live in, and they speak the same language as you. And when I say same language, I say, if you're from the Midwest, then they're going to speak Midwest. If you're New York, then they're going to speak New York, you know.
Well, time zones.
Whatever. Time zones help too.
It depends, right? So when I was working with those on Fiverr, honestly, a lot of them were overseas somewhere else, right? You can tell on Fiverr where these people were.
But Fiverr's project-based. It's not ongoing based.
So again, like the expectations are a little bit different. And, you know, to be quite honest, they're also, sometimes they are slow in responding, but they tell you that, right? And you again know what you're paying for.
But the people that are on Fiverr, I've used Fiverr as well. I feel like the people that are on Fiverr also know that they are held by a certain expectation. Mm-hmm. They're not. I know that when I have used people on Fiverr, I've had a great experience.
Yeah, I think the platform kind of instills like a quality control.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that,
yeah,
you know, all offshore is bad. I'm just saying, just know what it is that you're hiring for. And talk to yourself about it. Like, is this going to make sense for me? Fiverr would make sense. It's project based. If you're not in a massive hurry and it's not something that's compliance, that doesn't need compliance, doesn't have a liability connected to it, is not going to be, I don't know, sensitive to anything.
Well, you're obviously totally higher the risk. You probably want to hire.
Yeah, right? The closer to your home it should be.
That too, especially if you're living in an area like ours, geography has a lot to do with it, for sure.
Absolutely.
Around here. But like all in all though, I mean, it's just, how would you say it? You end up paying for it one way or the other. If you don't pay for it today, you'll end up paying for it down the road. Meaning that, you know, I went cheap as much as I was very naive and I didn't feel like it was worth the price. So I guess I didn't go cheap. So when I did that for like marketing, you know, I'd spend a lot of money later on in the business to undo everything that I didn't do properly the
yeah.
last 2 years because I didn't hire marketing professionals, the right marketing professionals to help me put in place the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find that the same way with, I think IT folks will tell you the same. It's a lot harder to undo something than mm-hmm. it is to start fresh the
yeah.
right way. When it comes to accounting finance, for sure, you want to try to go back 3 to 5 years. Oh, that's going to cost you a penny.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, you're going to end up paying for it anyways. So it's whether or not you want to pay the right price now and reap the benefits now, or you're going to kick the can down the road and eventually hit a hard pace where pay more, probably even more than what you would have paid in the beginning. to undo everything and then get it back on the right track.
So. I will also say, though, that this is not, I know we're speaking a lot to small businesses, mm-hmm. micro businesses here. Yeah, but
I'm
this
talking
is,
about like $1 million businesses.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, like, we this is for
my
the 10
client million. Pool was 5 to 10 million. They were all like this.
Yes, they're all like this. Well, I want our listeners to think that they're not,
these
they're
are not startups. These are not people who've been in business for a year. I'm talking about people who've been in business for 10, 15, maybe sometimes even 20 years.
Right? And if you're making 10 million, 30 million, 50 million, yep. whatever it is, I had a client that was 60 in the 60 millions who literally could not see what the value of a bookkeeper was. But, you know, again,
it could argue the fact they got the 60 million and not needing one, but think about how big they could be if they had one.
Well, there's more to it, but
okay.
Anyway.
Well, anyways, not for
anyway,
this
not for this episode. But regardless, what I'm saying is that if you're looking at your company's budget and you're like, oh, you know, maybe we need to cut here, we need to cut there. It's okay to trim the fat, mm-hmm. but don't trim the fat and then for the sake of forsaking quality.
Yeah. So when you get bigger, you want to trim the fat, right? In a sense of maybe you overhired. That's trimming it out. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe the way you package your services and your offering isn't effective anymore. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you need to trim some fat around there.
Yeah. Right?
That's trimming the fat. Like mm-hmm. you can't get away from the basic like foundational things you need in your business.
Yeah.
It's gonna come haunting you eventually. And I mean, look, I get it. That's why we did well, because we picked up a lot of clients who needed a lot of fixing up and mm-hmm. clean up before they got it right and going forward. But it's also painful, right? That you can tell. I mean, it still hurts the business mm-hmm. When that happens. So, hey.
And we are about to go diving into famous examples where we're going to talk about that. So now let's go into
when she says stuff. We, she really needs
All right, so in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale, revealing the dots between the living room startup and the success story on the cover of Forbes. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history, and sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion.
And Savannah was so inspired that I forgot to do my homework, so.
You know what?
Let her take it.
Because you forgot, I have two people.
Of course you do. One of them must.
Nope.
Whoa.
What?
Nope.
I know. I'm just, you know, surprising everybody all the time. Okay.
Let's hear.
So my famous example is going to be on the two different companies. So we're going to start with Circuit City. What a freaking train wreck that. Oh, God, it makes me so sad. Arguably, the biggest blunder was firing all of their experienced, better paid workers for cheaper, inexperienced ones. That was a decision that they made collectively to, that's where the whole trimming
okay,
the
that's
fat.
That's not trimming the fat. That's just going cheap.
That is. yeah. So in all, they fired over 3,000 employees, and it was supposed to be a way for them to save money. Spoiler alert, it did not, in fact, save money.
Where are they now?
Not around here. Not anywhere here. In a cemetery somewhere. The highest paid employees were the most experienced employees who had accumulated higher wages over the years. On top of this, Circuit City had also decided to save money by outsourcing its IT department, which I'd say, generally speaking, is okay. But when you are as large of a conglomerate as Circuit City is, you might want to have them in-house. When Circuit City decided to fire the more experienced, higher cost workers and replace them with a younger, underpaid workforce, they ended up costing themselves so much they went bankrupt. So now there are a lot of great high-end companies that know their value and do not waver from them. And to be honest, they've been quite successful for many years because of it. One of my favorite examples is Tiffany's, mainly because I come from a family and a culture of jewelry store owners. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've used Tiffany's before because it's just so, it's so perfect. It's so perfect of an example. There's something to be said for that little blue box, or is it green? I don't know.
It's actually Tiffany Blue. I think they actually IP the color.
That's insane. Their color is a patented hue, unique only to them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's insane to me. They sell jewelry just like every other jewelry store, and some of the jewelry they sell is unique to them, just like every other jewelry store, at least the ones that I know. But people will pay a considerably higher price knowing that the product will never go on sale and just to have the opportunity to say they got it from Tiffany's. That, to me, is very successful branding and a company that truly knows their worth. You won't find a sale there, and you won't find anything cheap either. And yet somehow they've made it work. Moral of the story, Tiffany's can sell the same product as every other jewelry store in America for a higher price and a promise it will never go on sale, coupled with a remarkable customer experience and engagement. Oh my gosh, that you could do the same thing if you wanted to. We're going to link the show notes, or rather, we are linking in the show notes an awesome article on companies that know their value and never waver from them. Hopefully you can use them as an example. So now we're moving on, because I'm the only one talking. There's a saying that goes, put your money where your mouth is. And we're drilling down a bit further here to connect what we've discussed at a granular level to tangible sources you can take to get you to the next level.
I have one recommendation, really, ultimately. I don't have a book or anything for this one, because I feel like this is probably more of a massive math problem than anything else. But, I mean, like we had said earlier, my one thing is budget.
Yeah.
Budget your living costs so you know what's there. If you're starting up, right? Again, this is for, like, people who are starting up. Budget your living costs. And then, like we had recommended, budget around $10,000 just to set aside for all of your business, running of your business type of expenses. And then for maybe our listeners out there who are a little bit larger, who has been in business for quite some time, you know, trimming the fat is not a bad thing. You know, every quarter, taking a look at your profit and loss statement, although if you don't have one and you can't see one, you may want to start trimming the fat with your bookkeeper, accountant. But taking a look and really questioning whether or not, you know, you're getting the value of what you're spending for. And if there's any parts in your business that you feel like could be better, that's people related, that maybe you are underpaying. And that's part of the problem, right? So just kind of having a very honest conversation with yourself, and then actually use a budget template of some sort, right? It doesn't have to be fancy. In fact, you can probably go in Excel and search budget template, and you can come up with a couple. They're a little complicated, so you can probably delete most of the lines off of it, to be quite honest. But your budget doesn't have to be incredibly, you know, like high tech. It just needs, you know, money coming in, and then you just start listing the type of money that needs to go out for you to have a viable business, and then that will give you like a real goal as to how much money you need to make in order to cover all of your expenses to get to whatever profit that you want at the end of the day, right? And doing it in your head doesn't count. If anything, worst comes to worst, write it down on a piece of paper or a notebook, but you got to be honest and do that math for yourself. And there's just no two ways about that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I get it. If you can't afford to hire all these professionals right now, your company, though, should not be suffering for it. I highly recommend you look into Google Workspace or Microsoft 365 to create a virtual storefront. You may also want to look into Zapier for automations and connect it to the platforms you use to run your everyday business. Most important, in my opinion, is a bookkeeper. I'm sure you can find someone who will either exchange services with you, or you can lean on a monthly or quarterly basis just to ensure that your books are clean. If that person also has a QuickBooks wholesale account, maybe you could ask them to if for a discount for a paid subscription, which can only be brand new. It has to be a brand new subscription, but you know, it doesn't hurt to utilize that. I want to say it's like a 30 or 35% discount a month. If you're a nonprofit, you can get a subscription for free from, I can never remember the name of it, but if I can think of it, we'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
What you can do is you can get it for free, so long as no one in your organization already is associated with a QuickBooks account. Lastly, take advantage of the resources within your town, city, county, or state. There are numerous programs specifically designed for small businesses that are struggling with growth and the money to support it. You could qualify for a grant, which could make a huge difference for the future of your business. You know, it doesn't mean it's not only for companies that are very small either. It's not like you have to be below a certain income. It could be for multi-million dollar companies, but, you know, multi-million dollar companies sometimes require cash or have cash flow, you know, problems as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All the things to keep in mind.
Yes. So please join us for our next episode where we will discuss reconnecting with your disconnected remote team. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind the business behind your small business, because all great success starts small. Bye.